Steger would later write some of this. He wrote, "As the days pass, Anna's body swells and deforms more and more. At one point, it is so disfigured that her body has become a bloated, shapeless mass, and nuns turn away from her bed, fearing she may explode." Like a Willy Wonka blueberry girl.
Exactly.
Like yeah.
That. I couldn't have put
that, that. He said that in his writing.
Yeah. He's like that Billy Willy Wonka
like
blueberry
girl. Like in the Willy
girl.
Wonka blueberry
girl. Sometimes her forehead elongates, kind of like when you're in the Haunted Mansion elevator.
Yeah, exactly.
Very nice.
Hello, welcome back to Shit They Don't Tell You. I'm Nikki Lima.
Hello, and my name is Steve Green.
And this is a spooky episode for the month of Shocktober.
Please now flicker your lights wherever you are.
Yeah, wherever you are. If you can't pay the electric bills, maybe candles or a lighter.
Oh, that's
work.
Good.
Yeah.
It's go find spooky. Your matches out there.
Pretty spooky.
And then you gotta light them up, and then you gotta blow them out.
And then blow them out. Make sure you blow them out.
Yep.
We don't want to be the cause of any fires.
You could use
a
cell phone light and flicker that.
Oh, you could. Yeah. Modern day technology. Hell yeah, everybody. Well, so I decided, because I wanted to talk about something spooky for the month of October, I would look into exorcisms. Because I think exorcisms are fascinating. The fact that someone's job right now today is to go and exorcise demons from people's bodies.
Absolutely sick.
And not only, once I started looking into exorcisms, not only is that someone's job, but that job is on the rise. Like, that industry of exorcism is booming right now.
That's wild.
Which I'm like fascinated by.
I've heard there's a ton of those in Mexico.
Probably.
Yeah.
From these stories, the most crazy stories that I've read, they're all like German based.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know. What are you guys doing over there in Germany?
Catholicism, probably.
Probably a lot of Catholicism. And for those of you who are unaware what an exorcism is, Wikipedia defines it as the religious or spiritual practice of evicting demons or other spiritual entities from a person or an area that is believed to be possessed. Depending on the spiritual beliefs of the exorcist, this may be done by causing the entity to swear an oath, performing an elaborate ritual, or simply by commanding it to depart in the name of a higher power. This practice is an ancient and part of the belief system of many cultures and religions. Requested and performed exorcism began to decline in the United States by the 18th century and occurred very rarely until the latter half of the 20th century, when the public saw a sharp rise due to the media attention exorcisms were getting. There was a 50% increase in the number of exorcisms performed between the early 1960s and the mid-1970s. That's a fuck ton of increase.
That's a lot.
So not only am I going to go over what I think are the most chilling exorcist cases, but also why is it on the rise right now, and what is the process of performing an exorcism or getting an exorcism done? Those are things that I'm going to cover in the second half, but first, spooky time. Okay, so one of like the craziest, I read a bunch of like these exorcist stories, possession stories, but one of the craziest ones is this one from Anna Auckland. There's a book called Begone Satan, a soul-stirring account of diabolical possession in Iowa. And it's all about this Anna Auckland case. And Anna Auckland, I don't think is her real name. I think that's a pseudonym. Yeah, it is. Her real name is Emma Schmidt. But
you just blew up her pseudonym.
Well, you could have Googled it.
Wow.
But, yeah, sorry. Sorry, Emma.
Sorry, Anna.
Sorry.
Or should I say Susan?
But she's really well known by her pseudonym, Anna Auckland. She was born in 1882 in Wisconsin, in the United States, to German immigrants. See, like, why? Even in the United States once, it's German immigrants. Germany, you did something.
They did a lot of somethings, though.
Did a lot of somethings. Okay, so not much is known about her early childhood, but there doesn't seem to have been anything particularly abnormal about her in those early years. She was raised in a devoutly Catholic family and was apparently always known as quiet, but mostly charming and cheerful girl. In later years, there's been speculation that her father might have been abusive towards her, but this was never confirmed. She seemed like a normal girl, okay, until the age of 14. That's when shit started to hit the fan. Okay, it began with a sudden, inexplicable aversion to all things religious. Anna had always gone to church regularly, and she actually seemed to enjoy it, and she was very involved with the church and all these various activities. But upon turning 14, she found herself feeling very ill and uncomfortable when she entered the building or even laid her eyes upon religious imagery. This grew in intensity until she had a hard time even stepping into the church at all, as if some barrier was barring her from entry. And if she did manage to enter, she would become horribly ill and panicked, overcome with unbearable dread. Communion waters were vomited up. Communion wafers. You know, the wafer that when you do first communion or when you do communion. So they were vomited up. Holy images deeply upset her. She would go into fits when confronted with the Bible, holy water, or any holy imagery, eventually not going to church at all, even though even eerier were her vocal musings and how she wanted to vandalize church property or attack priests, which she would relay in a sort of a trance, and she wouldn't remember saying any of that stuff later.
Jesus.
Yeah. She would like go in a trance, and then she'd be like, I'm going to destroy you.
14's a hell of a year.
Yeah. I mean, it's a hard time for girls.
It is.
It's
like when changing.
Your hormones are happening.
Demons are coming out of your
body. Demons are possessing you. Yeah. It's crazy. At home, she would blurt out incredibly, deeply obscene things, detailing depraved, unspeakable violence and sexual acts she could not have possibly known about, as well as an insatiable, unhealthy interest in sex. So this girl was horny, and she was talking about all kinds of sexual shit.
Whoa.
So there were also epic mood swings and violent outbursts. Well, this part I feel like I can relate to.
I think all of this you can relate to so far.
So far, yeah. Get very horny, and then I have mood swings. This sounds pretty normal.
She knows more
to
about
me.
Sex than her parents think.
Yeah.
Kind of checks all the boxes.
Well, in her violent outbursts, which happens worse in some women than others, but she would shout at people or break things in abrupt fits of rage that sprang from seemingly nowhere. And then she also became morose and distant, spending most of her time alone and shunning all company and keeping herself in self-exile within her room. And this deeply unsettled her parents. She just became a recluse. Actually, this still sounds like me.
Pretty teenager shit, yeah.
This still sounds like
me. Yeah.
Okay. Well, listen. If you're not sold yet.
She started watching movies in her room alone, and she was talking about boys.
I love how I preface this by saying this is one of the most disturbing cases I ever watched.
So far,
this
so
girl got mood swings and wanted to be alone and eat ice cream. It's fucking crazy.
And then when she left the house, she went to the mall and started shopping.
And then she cried. It's like, it couldn't solve her problems. Okay, if you're not sold yet, listen to this. As things progressed for the worse, the advice of medical and psychiatric professionals was sought, but no one could find anything physically wrong with her, nor any particular reason for her outburst. So nothing wrong with her physically or mentally. Every single professional who looked at her deemed her to be completely normal, and she never displayed her bizarre apparent behavior during these visits. However, at home, things were getting scarier. Anna's violent temper and antisocial tendencies, she could purportedly sometimes be heard to blurt out words or phrases in Latin, a language she had no knowledge of. This would last for several years until Anna's exasperated mother began to suspect that she might be under the influence of demonic forces and turned to the church for help. So she's like blurting out Latin phrases, talking about wanting to fuck everybody and like destroying things in fits of rage. Okay. So then Anna's mother goes to the church for help, and she was referred to a Capuchin priest. I don't know. Capuchin. I don't know. I've never heard of Capuchin, but it's a Capuchin priest originally from Bavaria, Germany, by the name of Father Theophilus Reisinger, who was known as a bit of an expert on demons and came to examine her and her family. After he witnessed Anna's total aversion to religious objects and prayers and then watched her utter stuff in Latin, as well as her knowledge of languages she could not have possibly known, including Polish and other Slavic languages, Reisinger came to the conclusion that the girl was possessed and went about organizing an exorcism, which was carried out in June of 1912. According to all accounts, this first exorcism seemed to work just fine. He did the exorcism, and then she was like, back to normal. But then, like a decade or so later, she was plagued by it again. So in 1928, at the age of 46 now, like years and years later, decades later, after going through a few more episodes, Anna again turned to that same priest, Father Ratzinger, and was really desperate. And this time that priest was like, yo, I need help with these demons. So he enlisted help with one of his trusted priests. And that guy's name was Joseph Steger. And he begged Joseph Steger to join him. And Steger was like, I don't really want to, but you're my friend, so I'll help. So he was like really reluctant to do it. And then it seems that around this time, it came to light that, oh yeah, this is why Steger didn't want to do it. Because it seems like her father came out as not having been truly dedicated to the Catholic Church. And in fact, was engaging in a lot of witchcraft with her aunt Nina. Yeah. So
for how long?
For years before he died. So now the dad and the aunt that were doing the witchcraft, they're now deceased, but it had come out that they were doing witchcraft instead of, like, they were just pretending to be Catholics, but really they were doing a lot of witchcraft.
Whoa.
So and they supposedly cursed Anna at a really early age through spells and special herbs sprinkled in her food, supposedly because the father was angry that he could not state his incestuous desires for his daughter.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so like they think he tried to make moves on his daughter rejected him, so he cursed her. There was no way to know whether this was actually true or not, but the idea that her own family had perhaps called these demons into her certainly added a layer of menace to the proceedings. So Anna's 46. She's like, please help, because these demons have been in me for too long. Anna was placed in a convent run by the Franciscan sisters in Erling, Iowa, where the exorcism was to take place. It was chosen because this was very secluded, and also because they wanted to get her as far away from home as possible. They thought maybe that was having an influence on her. So it actually, it took her a while to get into that location because, she exhibited this like almost superhuman strength, and like several nuns and priests had to like get her physically into this location. She started snarling and flailing.
45-year-old woman?
Yeah, she started to flail, like she was snarling and growling at the building, and she was flailing just by looking at it, and she just refused to enter. So they had to force her into there. She had to literally be dragged into the covenant walls and bound to a bed where she growled and snapped at anyone who came near her. On August 17th, 1928, the exorcism proceedings began in earnest, and those two priests had to like go in this room where this woman is like writhing on the bed and snarling and growling at her, and they're like, all right, we're going to do this exorcism. So first they wanted to kind of test her. They were like, maybe she's making it up, maybe, because like a lot of times like abuse victims, mm-hmm. since it had come out that maybe she was abused, they have other disorders. And she, even though she had gone to psychiatrists who ruled them out, they were still like, maybe she is going through an episode and acting out. So they tried placebo effects. So they decided to experiment by testing whether she could tell the difference between regular water and holy water. Oh, so sure. They would splash her with holy water and she would like freak out and like start screaming, and then they would also later on that day they would splash her with what they told her was also holy water, and she wouldn't do anything.
Really?
So she could tell the difference between the holy water and the regular water.
Maybe one was in a very ornate jar.
Maybe.
And the other one wasn't.
But they tried to be very disguising, wow. like not letting her know any of it. They also did the same thing for food. They would bless some food and not other food to see if she could tell the difference, and she always did. So she would throw up the blessed food, but she would not throw up the regular food at all. It was completely inexplicable. She would also throw epic tantrums when Latin was read to her as a prayer, but not when it was spoken conversationally. And this was seen as definite signs of a genuine demonic possession, the likes of which no one present had ever seen before. She would also curl up in the corner to purr or hiss like a cat, or to deftly climb up the walls like a spider.
What the
until
fuck?
She was forcefully restrained to the bed and tied up. Yeah, she's just fucking crawling up the wall like a spider.
This is like that exorcism movie, dude.
Yeah, but these people actually saw this shit. And like they recorded some of it. The nuns like all got so freaked out they had to like switch covenants after this. Like, so this book details all of these eyewitness accounts of this happening.
Holy shit.
So yeah, she crawled up, but we're like, you know, me and you, we're like, come on, a human like crawled up a wall like a
no,
spider.
No, I'm like, Spider-Man, like, it could happen.
They all, everyone there was like, yeah, this shit happened. So who knows, you know? We don't have like video recording of it, but she would crawl up the wall like a spider until she was like forced to back down to the bed and bound. Anna is said to have gone unconscious and to have levitated to stick up against the ceiling with so much force that it took several people to pull her back down. So
how could you even pull her down? I would be so fucking scared of her levitating.
She's stuck to she levitated and stuck to the ceiling. What? And then they're like, they try to get her back down.
Fuck, man.
I mean, I know it's not funny, but it's like, it's pretty funny. Like,
it's funny that they're.
It's funny that like that's the thing that they actually had to do.
It's funny that they're tugging at her like Nana in that Peter Pan movie.
Yeah.
To no avail.
She was thinking so many happy thoughts.
I know.
Apparently. So yeah. So she was like stuck to the ceiling, even though her herself seemed to be totally in a comatose state at that time. Mm. Voices, wails, growls, and screams were said to bellow out from her even in the absence of any movement from her mouth. So she wasn't even moving her mouth, and like they would hear just like growls, screams, different voices coming out
of
her.
Was it like you talking inside your mouth?
Maybe. Did you guys know I could do that? It was like,
if this was like, you know, the early 1930s,
maybe
I could pass.
So these vocalizations were common and sometimes so extreme that they seemed impossible to have come out of the mouth of this woman. Her voice often changing cadence, pitch, and timbre, with sometimes two voices at once speaking. Alien beast-like noises surging forth and a myriad of other animalistic sounds, including what sounded like a pack of wild beasts suddenly let loose.
Jesus.
So imagine.
She's got a sound.
She's fucking floating.
She's
got animal noises.
In her?
Yes.
My God.
Okay.
She started playing haunted house noises.
In addition to all this, she also had all these physical symptoms. So she purportedly vomited forth rancid liquid and tobacco leaves. She would just vomit tobacco leaves, spat constantly, urinated copious amounts, allegedly sometimes 10 to 20 times a day. She would just be peeing everywhere. She also clawed or bit at anyone who came close to her and was said to exhibit strength far beyond a normal human being. At the same time, her body supposedly began to change in appearance. Her eyes bulged inhumanely from her face. Her head and lips swelled up to incredible proportions, and her abdomen was claimed to distend to the point where it seemed like it would explode, only to revert to its normal size again to start the whole horrific cycle anew. Her head also physically elongated at certain times, and much of the time she spoke without moving her mouth, and the voices seemed to emanate from her throat. At times, her body was said to inexplicably increase in mass until the iron frame of the bed groaned under her weight. So she would just become like bloat into like a superhuman form, like a Marshmallow Man in Ghostbusters, and then she would go back to her normal size.
Elongate.
Yeah. Steger would later write some of this. He wrote, as the days pass, Anna's body swells into forms more and more. At one point, it is so disfigured that her body has become a bloated, shapeless mass, and nuns turn away from her bed, fearing she may explode. Like a Willy Wonka blueberry girl.
Exactly. Like
yeah.
That. I couldn't have put
that. He said that in his writing.
Yeah. He's like that Willy Wonka
like
blueberry
girl. Like in the Willy Wonka blueberry
girl. Sometimes her forehead elongates, kind of like when you're in the Haunted Mansion elevator.
Yeah, exactly.
Very nice.
And then she was making so much commotion that the public was like, oh, what's going on in there? And they'd like come over to watch. And over the course of the marathon exorcism, like, cause this happened, they were doing exorcisms night and day. Like there were, I think, three total over the course of 26 days.
On the same chick.
The same chick. Like they had to do it constantly or otherwise the demons would take over more forcibly. So anyway, the people came to watch and it became apparent that Anna was possessed by at least four distinct powerful entities as well as a horde of lesser spirits. So she's possessed by a lot of things. And one of the prominent entities introduced itself as Beelzebub, also called the Lord of the Flies, and one of the seven princes of hell, who was claimed to try and engage in the exorcists in complex philosophical debates and mind games. So when Beelzebub was president, he was like, I'm gonna fuck with these people and
yeah,
like would try to convince
convert.
them to come to his side. Another was supposedly Judas Iscariot, the very one who betrayed himself? Jesus Christ, whoa, and who was said to have been trying to convince Anna to commit suicide so that her soul would be transported to hell. The last two main spirits were Anna's very own father and aunt, who died since the first exorcism and seemingly had vengeance on their mind. The dad said he tried to have sex with her and was rejected, and the aunt confessed to killing three children while she was alive.
My God.
Yeah. So the spirits relentlessly taunted and insulted those present too. So like the crowds would gather, and the spirits like would like laugh, and they would reveal dirty secrets and information that nobody could have possibly known. So that was weird. Like how if it is just this girl,
yeah,
like
how does all this shit about
yeah, how does she know all this stuff? Like how does she know all these languages? How does she know what water is blessed and not blessed? How does she know all these people's secrets? That's like weird shit. There were also said to be swarms of flies and mosquitoes that would suddenly cloud the air out of nowhere, and then they would just vanish.
Are you shocked to find out that flies and mosquitoes are part of evil? Because I'm not.
I'm not at all. When I heard that, I was like, fuck yeah, yep, they should die.
Yep.
Or maybe they're like a bunch of evil spirits that like had to reincarnate into being mosquitoes.
Good.
Yeah, good.
Good.
Although they're the bitches. Like, why'd they get powers? God. That's
not
fair.
I hate it.
Okay. So the second priest, remember that guy I was telling you about who was like reluctantly like, I don't know, the dad did witchcraft, I don't know if I want to get involved. Well, he started to regret his decision to allow the exorcism within his church. And he confronted the first priest, Reisinger, over the exorcist stuff. And Reisinger reacted without surprise and blamed the demons for kind of like influencing the second priest. He's like, the demons are telling you that we shouldn't have worked together. And they're trying to, and like they tried to get the second priest to call the whole thing off.
I can't believe you got this chick crawling up the walls and levitating and shit, and this guy's like complaining about the job.
Yeah, the guy's like, I shouldn't have done this.
Like, hello, bro.
Yeah.
How could you blame the other cat for that?
So later, the demon speaking through Anna threatened the second priest, Steger, to withdraw permission for the exorcism. And it allegedly said, quote, he will learn to know us better. Lucifer is on his tracks and will make the kettle hot and heavy for him. Ha ha ha. Just wait until the end of the week when Friday comes. Then the following Friday, Steger received a call from a local farmer with a critically ill mother needing last sacraments. And while driving to the home, and just as he was about to cross a bridge over a ravine, a dark black cloud appeared and he was blinded. As a result, he crashed into the railing of the bridge and the car got completely destroyed. But he, like, other than a few cuts and frayed nerves, he wasn't seriously injured. So it was kind of like a warning.
This is crazy as
fuck. Isn't that crazy? And then later that day, when he returned to the covenant and the exorcism, the demon greeted him with, quote, today he pulled in his proud neck and was outpointed. I certainly showed up in him today. What about your new auto, that dandy car which was smashed to smithereens? It served you right. And then it didn't end there for that guy. He would go home and would be repeatedly awoken at night by noises in his room. And while this could easily be explained as rodents, the house had been rodent-free the entire 14 years that he had lived there before the exorcisms. And night after night, the noises continued, stopping only briefly in deference to various prayers.
Jesus.
Yeah, this story is fucking nuts, man. Okay, so then over time, it all became so unbearable and utterly terrifying that priests and nuns involved refused to stay for too long in Anna's presence, instead working in shifts lest the poisonous atmosphere and penetrating words of the demonic entities infect their souls. So they were like, oh, fuck this shit. They got in that guy's house. Like, it's going to attach to us.
Dude, imagine thinking you're going in for a routine exorcism.
Yeah.
And you got every fucking celebrity demon coming through.
Yeah.
Including Judas.
Yeah.
And Beelzebub.
Like the biggest ones of the ones.
The A-listers.
Yeah. So, they thought they were just going to deal with some ghosts, some random ghosts.
It's like being a security guard at a gated community. You're like, this is going to be a breeze.
Yeah. So the first priest was the one who spent the most time in the presence of evil, because he was like really determined to rid this woman of her demons. But it seemed like it might be a losing battle because the demons just continued to like increase in intensity and power of possession. But this guy kept at it, and over three sessions lasting over 23 days, the demons gradually began to weaken and lose their grip on Anna before finally one day Anna bolted up in the bed to proclaim, Beelzebub, Judas, Jacob, and Mina, hell, 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 my Jesus mercy, praised be Jesus Christ. And just like that, the demons were gone.
Holy fuck.
Yeah.
How'd they know they're gone? They're just...
She went back to living a normal life, although she was, like, kind of traumatized by it.
Oh, yeah.
But she didn't remember any of, like, the crazy shit, like the floating and stuff. So she was kind of... She was less affected than the nuns and the priests that had to witness all that. Also, I didn't mention during this time, like, the room smelled like shit. Like, smelled like absolute garbage.
Yeah, she wakes up and she's like, man, who peed in here?
Yeah. Well, the nuns, all of them, they asked to be transferred away because it was just so traumatic. And eventually the covenant itself got demolished in the 1990s. Anna went on to lead a fairly normal life, but she was, you know, a little bit traumatized. And then the priest became to... or the original priest, the one that was in there for the longest time, he kind of got famous for being America's foremost expert on exorcisms because they were like, that was the gnarliest exorcism I could have been exercised. So
and he's like, thank you.
He was on the page in Time magazine in 1936. And then the second priest, Father Steger, he just was like, I just want to lead a quiet life.
Yeah, I'm retiring. He went into hiding. This.
Yeah, he was very disturbed. So when they were interviewing people for this book, one of the nuns said, I was a witness to almost the whole period of the exorcism of the Erling possession case, and I can truthfully say that the facts mentioned in the Begone Satan are correct. Some of the scenes were even more frightful than described in the book. There was not the slightest doubt in my mind that the devils were present, and I will never forget the horrible scenes, vile, filthy, and dirty as long as I live. So what fascinates me is like these people... They were eyewitnesses, and they were like, it's new enough that they were able to interview and like give their accounts.
I'm going to fucking church after this shit.
Right?
100%.
Oh, by the way, this episode might go a little longer because like these stories were pretty insane.
This episode brought to you by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Maybe we should take a break right here.
I'm down.
Okay. Because this next story is also pretty terrifying, and I want you to be prepared. So grab a snack, grab a drink. Grab some holy water, grab your rosaries, and we'll see you in a second. Hey, thanks for listening to our podcast. We just want to take a break to tell you to like, thanks for listening to our podcast, and if you want to rate it, that would be really awesome for us.
Like, listen, we're on break. We're not talking to you like podcast hosts right now. We're just talking to you like people.
As a friend.
And we just want to say, please rate the show because it helps out huge amounts.
Like, we're not desperate. We're like kind of desperate.
We're giving shout outs right now to all the people who are giving it ratings. So huge shout out right now to Brian Jorgensen. That was sick of you, dude. Thank you. God bless. Huge shout out right now to Mark W. in Springfield, Connecticut.
Back to our podcast.
Jenny Blake.
Hey, back to our podcast.
In Tuscany,
and
Florida.
Back to our podcast.
God bless you. Thank you.
Steven.
Thank you for supporting the show.
Okay, we're back. And I'm going to start the second story, which I think I picked this story because it was the first story of an exorcism that actually went to a court trial. Like it ended in a court trial.
Whoa.
So it's mixing law, legal stuff, and religion, right? I mean, yeah. If you think of demons as being like a religious aspect or a spiritual thing, it was the first time that things were brought up in a court of law that were like to do with ghosts and demons.
Nice. It's like the Al Pacino movie.
Yeah, exactly. Wait, which one is that?
The one where he's the devil?
Keanu
Reeves?
My mind jumped to the movie that this is actually based on, which is The Exorcism of Emily Rose.
Oh, I was thinking Devil's Advocate.
Oh, I'll have to watch that one.
It's a sick movie.
Have you seen Exorcism?
I have not.
Emily
I cannot
Rose?
Watch scary movies.
Okay. Well, it stars Dexter's sister.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I heard she's really good in it, too.
She's really good. This movie's really good. I saw it a long time ago, but it was really good. They also did a good job of presenting both sides of the story.
Cool.
Like, whether you believe it was demons or you believe it could be explained away by her diagnosis of being epileptic.
Mm-hmm.
They presented both sides because I'll tell you the story.
Cool.
But, you know, it covers why the court decided what they decided.
Nice. And then I'll tell you the Devil's Advocate story.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Cool.
Wait, the movie story?
Yeah,
or,
yeah, the movie. Yeah. Okay. I'll take you through the whole movie. Yeah.
All right. So. This is the story of Annalise Michel. I don't know if it's Michel or Michelle. She's German too. Could you guess?
Yeah.
She was born on September 21st, 1952 in Bavaria, Germany. So Annalise and her three sisters were raised in a strict Catholic family. Notice any consistencies
so
here?
So far.
German and Catholic. Okay, her father, Joseph, had considered training as a priest, and three of her aunts were also nuns, so they were very freaking strict. 4 years before Annalise was born, her mother gave birth to an illegitimate daughter, Martha, and as a result, her mother suffered great shame and was forced to wear a black veil on her wedding day.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so when Annalise was a child, her mother encouraged her to atone for the sins of the illegitimacy through fervent devotion. When Annalise's sister, Martha, died at the age of 8 during an operation to remove a kidney tumor, this likely only increased Annalise's desire to do penance for her mother. So the mom was basically, from the time Annalise was born, was like, you need to repent for my sins.
Dude, she's born into that Catholic guilt, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Holy.
So in 1968, when she was 17 and still in high school, Annalise began to suffer from convulsions. Court findings have her experiencing her first epileptic attack in 1969, and it was then that a neurologist at the psychiatric clinic Wurzburg diagnosed her with grand mal epilepsy. Soon, Annalise started experiencing devilish hallucinations while praying. She also began to hear voices which told her that she was damned. The court determined that by 1973, Annalise was suffering from depression, considering suicide in 1975. Then she was convinced that she was possessed in 1975, and her parents gave up on the doctors from the psychiatric clinic. They were like, you're not helping our daughter. It's still happening. Her mom even saw her staring at a holy figure. I think it was Mother Mary, the Virgin Mary, and the mom said that her eyes went black, like completely black.
Jesus.
Yeah. So she was like, you're not helping my daughter out with the psychiatric stuff, like the traditional medicinal route and like the mental health route. So then they chose to rely solely on the exorcisms for healing. But later, people were like, her symptoms kind of match schizophrenia, and they wonder if maybe she would have responded to treatment had she been treated for schizophrenia. We'll never know. The first unofficial diagnosis was made by an older woman who accompanied Annalise on a pilgrimage. She noticed that Annalise avoided walking past a particular image of Jesus and that she refused to drink water from a holy spring. The woman also claimed that Annalise smelled hellishly bad. That's kind of mean. And an exorcist from a nearby town examined Annalise and concluded that she was demonically possessed. And after two failed requests, the rite of exorcism was finally granted by the bishop. So when you think someone might be possessed, you have to apply for it. And then the church kind of checks it out. And then like they have to approve that it actually is a demonic possession. And I was really curious about this approval process. So I'll get to that after this story, because I really wanted to know like what determines who they decided is possessed and whatnot.
Right.
Okay, so they were like, okay, we agree she's possessed. We're going to do this exorcism. And Annalise carried out a number of highly disturbing actions during this time. She licked her own urine off of the floor. So she would frequently pee and then lick up her own urine. She ate flies, spiders, and coal. She bit off the head of a dead bird in one instance. And then at another time, she crawled under a table and barked like a dog for 2 days. She would often be heard screaming through the walls for hours. Tearing off her clothes and urinating on the floor became a regular occurrence.
Why even put the clothes back on?
I know, right? Well, because these people like are possessed. They go through trances. So like they're in and out of being their normal selves and then being possessed.
Hmm.
So during her trance state, she's rip her clothes off and pee. And then during her normal state, she's like, oh, why am I naked? And she put it.
Oh, there's so much pee.
And there's so much pee. Yeah. Kind of sucks.
Yeah, it sucks.
I don't want to be possessed because it's like.
I thought about it, but now I'm like, nah.
It's messy and you smell bad all the time.
I don't like that. I need showers.
Yeah, it's true. You do need showers. So Annalise was convinced that she'd been possessed by several demons, including Lucifer, Judas Iscariot. Why both of them again?
Judas is so bored.
Yeah. Nero, Cain, Hitler. She was possessed by Hitler.
Whoa.
And Fleischmann, a disgraced Frankish priest from the 16th century, who the priest that was doing the exorcism said that she would have had no way of knowing about. But there was this one priest who like did some evil shit and he was cast out and yeah. So she like said that she was possessed by him too.
Wow.
She also mentioned a few other damned souls who had manifested themselves through her, but they were not as important. The freaky part though is that they actually have audio recording from her exorcisms, and this is like, if you're wondering like could she have been acting, listen to this audio and you tell me what like This is one of the most disturbing pieces of audio I've ever heard.
Can we play it?
Yeah.
Whoa, true.
You could do it. Okay, fine. Like, that one could be imitated. I found another clip online that I thought was way more disturbing. I thought this was like the shortened version of it, but hold on one second. Let me find it. Okay.
So far,
yeah,
I've heard a lot of that on the subway.
Okay. I'm watching one that has English subtitles, and she's basically saying, like, only dumbasses pray, and, like, all these people are stupid. But the voice that she has is, like, very guttural and, like, very from her throat.
Yes.
And, like, not natural. So a lot of people were like, maybe she got that from the movie The Exorcist. Because when you compare the two, it sounds very similar.
Yes.
And, like, you know, the actor playing her, like, didn't, or playing the, you know, the one that got possessed wasn't, like, actually possessed. So, like, you could make your voice sound like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't explain how she started feeling this way and acting this way before that movie came out.
Got it.
Yeah. It's like people were, like, trying to debunk it.
Pick it apart, of course.
Yeah,
you have to try.
Well, yeah, you have to. Yeah, but they were trying to be like, she's copying, but they're like, wait, she was doing this before.
Right.
She was like the OG. So it's pretty weird. Like, she's talking from a throat. Yes, a person could do that. And this was presented in court, that a lot of people also said that they brought up the point that maybe because they did so much exorcism stuff, by the way, she ended up dying during these exorcisms because of malnutrition. The official autopsy on July 1st, 1976 said that she succumbed to the effects of severe dehydration and malnourishment because while she was getting these exorcisms done, she wasn't eating.
Right.
And they were trying to make her eat, but she wanted to, like, starve the demons, basically. So
Holy
she wasn't
shit.
Eating, and so she was super malnourished. She died at, like, 60 pounds. At the time of her death, she was also suffering from pneumonia and a high fever, and they didn't call the doctor or anything. And then she was buried next to her illegitimate sister, Martha, at the outer edges of the cemetery. This was really controversial because people were like, maybe she just had epilepsy or schizophrenia, and then she wasn't being treated properly, which is very valid, like, because they didn't go through, like, all the steps of what it could have possibly been.
They're like, let's just check if she's a demon first.
Yeah.
And we'll kind of circle back to that.
Well, they had gone to the psychiatrist and stuff. And remember, she got diagnosed with being epileptic. But then her possession stuff, her fits got worse after she got on medication. So the mom was like, I think this medication's making her worse.
Right.
And so she took her off of that medication. And then by that time, I guess it was too late because demons already entered. They brought this up in court that the exorcisms took a significant toll on her body. So Annalise endured 67 rites of exorcism over a period of 10 months. Over time, the ligaments in her knees ruptured due to the 600 genuflections that she performed obsessively during each exorcism session. A genuflection is an act of reverence consisting of falling onto one or both knees, called a W. That if you're on both knees, it's a double genuflection. And on June 30th, during her last rite of exorcism before her death, she was too weak and emaciated to perform the genuflections on her own. So her parents actually stood up and helped her carry through the motions. That's how weak she was. Some experts believe that this is possible. And psychiatrists who testified during the trial spoke about the doctrination induction, which in relation to Annalise explains that she maybe accepted her behavior as a form of demonic possession because people were telling her she was possessed. Like they were acting and treating her like she was possessed. So she just kind of like accepted it.
Whoa.
Yeah. And then just started to act in that behavior.
What was the trial about? It was just about wrongful
death? The trial was, yeah, about wrongful, about negligence. Mm-hmm. Like, could her parents have prevented that death? Or was, did she die due to negligence or, like, was the malnutrition preventable?
Right.
And, like, it was. But she was also an adult that refused food.
Right.
Keep in mind. So, like, you go back and forth the story and it's like, huh, I don't know. Like, she was an adult. She believed she was possessed. So how can you, like, tell somebody?
Well, you could put them on a feeding tube and shit, too, right?
That's what, ultimately, that's what the court determined, that they could have saved her by taking her to a hospital, getting her on a feeding tube. I think they should have taken her to a hospital anyway, because then at least, like, if she is possessed, all the doctors can see it, you know?
Right.
Like, sure. Then it's not just the family being like, you don't understand. She's possessed.
I say, put her in a holy water jacuzzi, then take her to the hospital. Then you do both.
Yeah, exactly. Holy water jacuzzi, man.
Holy water
Why
jacuzzi.
Has no one done a holy water jacuzzi?
I've been talking about it for years.
I know. You're always talking about it.
You should put them in the holy water jacuzzi for, you know, until they get a little bit wrinkly.
And then you go to a hospital.
And then you go to the hospital after. Then you cover both.
Yeah. So she refused to eat. She forced herself to fast because she believed that it would rid her of Satan's influence. And at the time of her death, she weighed only 68 pounds. Prior to her death, she had spoke of dying to atone for the sins of wayward youth and apostate priests of the modern church. So there's a lot. I'm skeptical of this case. Yes, it does seem like she was possessed by demons, especially when you hear like audio like that. But then there's also like she had a lot of trauma in her childhood and she was kind of indoctrinated into this needing to atone for sins and that there was always like evil around.
Yeah, and a lot of times when people are traumatically impacted like that,
mm-hmm.
they like split their own personalities off so that they create a place like where they can be safe as them, and then they create a place where they can like rage
yeah,
out.
Yeah, so I think what you're talking about is dissociative identity disorder.
Yes.
DID. And yeah, like that usually is caused from something traumatic that happened in your youth, and then you can't physically handle the trauma, so you split off your personalities.
You can't be yourself anymore.
And each personality carries a different part of the trauma.
Yeah.
So when they do exorcisms, and this is what I thought was so interesting, because the process of getting an exorcism, the Catholic Church is actually really strict now. Like they don't want to be this like joke, and they don't want you to think that like they're trying to get you to believe in possession and stuff. So they are very scrutinizing when they approve an exorcism to be had. And part of that is they first need you to see a psychologist or a psychiatrist who can possibly diagnose for known issues. So the vast majority of cases end there. Like 80% of the cases end at that. They go get a diagnosis, and they can be diagnosed with DID, which you were talking about, or schizophrenia, or possibly some other PTSD or drug and alcohol abuse. A lot of these things are also caused by childhood trauma.
Yeah.
So, and they, you know, they have the same sort of markings of where you black out and you can't remember these things that have happened. So they're like, you know what? You got to make sure you don't have one of these things first. But they can also, they're not mutually exclusive. Like, you can have PTSD and get possessed by demons.
So, of course you can.
You know? So they also, if you've already gotten a diagnosis, they also look for certain common traits of possession, which is a facility in a language the person has never learned. So, you know, that makes...
That shit's wild.
Yeah, when you, like,
know Latin
all of a sudden and you never learned Latin before.
I don't know about that, bud.
Physical strength beyond his or her age or condition. Like, how are you a superhuman? How can you like physically fight 10 people?
What about the mommy thing?
What mommy thing?
Mommy strength.
Yeah.
Like baby's trapped under a car and mommies pick up the fucking car.
Yeah.
Within a moment of strength.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying?
Maybe they're possessed by angelic forces or something.
You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. Yeah.
I'm just trying to poke holes.
Well, yeah. So these are just, you have to kind of like fit all this criteria for the Catholic Church too. So you have to like know Latin and you have to have all the strength.
Wow.
The mommies, they don't really know Latin.
They definitely don't know Latin.
I mean,
although some do. We're not saying not all mommies. We're not saying all moms.
Not all moms.
Some mommies do know Latin. We just want to cover our bases.
Yeah, just going to cover that. Yeah. Okay. They also, one of the other traits is access to secret knowledge, like knowing other people's shit without, like, you couldn't have possibly known their secrets. And then also a vehement aversion to God and sacred objects, including crucifixes and holy water.
That was the fucking bomb about that other story.
Yeah.
Because that chick's like, even not rejecting the placebo.
Yeah, exactly. That was the craziest one.
That's
to
really
me,
good shit.
Where I'm like, it rules out all the holes that I would bring up.
But I feel like you did a good job giving us one on each side of the fence.
Yeah, exactly.
Like how it could be faked, maybe, and
or
even
due to trauma, or you didn't investigate. Fake,
but like the people had a reason, or like it was in their incentive to say this chick was possessed because she died under our care.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that one was just like, I don't know, like. There's a lot of what I would consider abuse.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't consider it abuse. They just considered it a strict religious upbringing. But like Annalise had to sleep on a cobblestone floor once to atone for the sins of wayward priests and drug addicts that were homeless and were sleeping on the floors.
Jesus.
Yeah. So from a young age, she was kind of conditioned to think that she had to atone for other people's sins.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Wow.
Okay, so if you want to get an exorcism, you have to pass all of that criteria. Only a very small number of exorcism requests make it through this discernment process. And the Catholic exorcists that were interviewed in this article that I was reading, each with more than a decade of experience as being an exorcist, they had only worked on a handful of cases deemed to be true possession. So even they're saying, like, you know, most of it is people, you know, being spinning out, kind of,
yeah,
warping their own realities or having some other diagnosis that they need to find out beforehand. But there's a handful that they're like, this one is a true possession.
Like, yo, that was Beelzebub, actually.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The church wants to tread lightly and be skeptical when examining possible cases of demonic possession. And one of the priests says they treat exorcism like a nuclear weapon, meaning a countermeasure that is important to have in the arsenal, but that should only be used when no other explanation can be found.
Mm.
So they do it very, very rarely. Okay, so then let's say you have passed and you're like, okay,
yes,
you get in the exorcism, baby.
Yes.
You've been deemed possessed by demonic forces.
I was denied 3 times.
But you finally got it. So what happens during an exorcism? I wanted to know, like, how do they go about getting these demons out? So usually what happens is, and this is according to the priests that were interviewed, there's this article from The Atlantic that I was reading. I maybe link it in the description, but there was like a bunch of priests that were interviewed. And so it wasn't just one or two. And this is kind of the sum of what they said happens. The ritual begins with the exorcist, who is typically assisted by several people, sprinkling holy water on the possessed person. The exorcist makes the sign of the cross and kneels to recite the litany of saints, followed by several readings of scripture. He then addresses the demon or demons, establishing the ground rules that they must abide by: to reveal themselves when called, give their names when asked to identify themselves, and leave when dismissed. Because the exorcist is working with the full authority of God and Jesus Christ, Catholic doctrine stipulates that demons have no choice but to obey.
So far, it's pretty boring. It's like Sunday school.
At the rite's climax, sometimes an hour or more into the ritual, the exorcist calls on the devil directly, and he goes, "I cast you out, unclean spirit, along with every satanic power of the enemy, every specter from hell, and all your fell companions."
Sick.
Sessions typically end with a closing prayer and a plan to continue. And then for those few people the church believes are truly possessed, a half a dozen more exorcisms may be carried out before the priest is confident that the demons have been fully expelled. Sometimes they pretend like they're expelled, but really they live in there a little bit longer, which is what I think happened in the first one.
Where did they get this fucking info? Is it in the Bible?
Yeah.
Actually,
I was reading another article that I don't have all the details written down for it, but I just thought it was fascinating that it's actually, the demand is higher than ever for exorcists, but there's less interested people than ever. Because they're like, I'm too scared of this shit. And like the process for exorcising these demons had to be translated to English and in a bunch of different, you know, other languages that modern day people could understand. And so there's high demand and low supply for exorcists. So if you're thinking of getting a new job right now, I know the job market's tough, but like exorcists are in really high demand.
It's an emerging field.
Yeah. A lot of priests, young priests, do not want to touch it.
How much you get an hour on average?
I mean, I don't even think you get anything. You're just working for the church. And like you just have to like work because you believe in that's your purpose in your mission in life.
Oh, that's tight. Okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
And then in this article, they covered like how does someone get possessed? Because I was like, shit, like if this happens, I don't want this to happen to me. And then I get denied exorcist, right? So how do you get possessed? According to Catholic doctrine, in order to take possession of a person in the first place, demons have to rely on doorways. So basically, you have to open up your channels in order for them to enter. Mm. So this can include things like habitual sin and family curses, in which an act of violence or violence committed by one generation manifests itself in the subsequent generations. But was from the article. In this interview, they said that the priests that were interviewed kept coming back saying that like these things are rarely the reason why. The top two reasons that people get possessed over and over, like this is what almost all the priests says. They were like, there's two particular doorways that are the top two reasons. One, nearly every Catholic exorcist that was spoken to cited a history of abuse in this victim, in particular sexual abuse, Whoa. As a major doorway for demons. Father Thomas, which was one of the priests that was interviewed, said that as many as 80% of the people who came to him seeking an exorcism are sexual abuse survivors. According to these priests, sexual abuse is so traumatic that it creates a kind of soul wound, as Thomas puts it, that makes a person more vulnerable to demons. The exorcists, to be clear, aren't saying that sexual abuse torments people to such an extent that they come to believe they're possessed. The exorcists contend that abuse fosters the conditions for actual demonic possession to take hold. But from a secular standpoint, the link to sexual abuse helps explain why someone might become convinced that he or she is being menaced by something sinister and overpowering. A lot of disorders are linked to sexual abuse, PTSD, DID, schizophrenia, those ones that were mentioned, alcohol addictions, drug addictions. But they're not mutually exclusive. The trauma is so much that your mind or soul, depending on what you believe, wants to separate itself from the physical form, thus providing entry for the demons to take over. The second doorway that is the most popular, the second doorway...
Sleeping on the floor of a bus.
No, but okay. Close.
Okay.
An interest in the occult.
Yep.
Which is on the rise right now, which kind of explains, well, if you want to go down that route, if you're like, why is it on the rise? There's more and more people in today's society that are interested in the cult than ever before. Most of the exorcists that were interviewed said they believed that demonic possession was becoming more common, and they cited a resurgence in magic, divination, witchcrafts, and attempts to communicate with the dead as primary cause.
Ouija boards.
Yes, exactly.
Shady fucks.
According to Catholic teaching, engaging with the occult involves accessing parts of the spiritual realm that may be inhabited by demonic forces. Those practices become the engine that allows the demon to come in. And they were saying that, a lot of historians and journalists and academics have documented a renewed interest in magic, astrology, and witchcraft, primarily among millennials right now. When the occult is a substitution for God, people want to take shortcuts, and the occult is all about power and knowledge. One exorcist even pointed to Harry Potter and said that the books and films disarmed Americans from thinking that all magic is darkness. A lot of historians of religions say that during periods when the influence of organized religions ebbs, so when like less people are interested in religion, which is kind of like how it is now, when that starts to ebb, people seek spiritual fulfillment through the occult. And today we're seeing a hunger for contact with the supernatural, which I could say is pretty true.
Oh, yeah. Look at how many people are doing yoga out there.
We're into aliens and shit.
Fuck yeah.
I would love to receive. No, I don't know. I don't want it.
I want alien attention.
I would like to know. I would like to hear of other people's stories and involvement with aliens, but I don't want to be involved.
I would like to see it. I would like to see one.
I don't want to see one.
I've seen a craft before.
I heard.
Yeah.
Listen to the UFO episode if you want to hear that.
If you guys want
to
check that out.
But you were talking about the Ouija board, which I think I...
Dude, that one's... That's shit. I don't fuck with that shit.
I don't fuck with the Ouija board, no. Guys. Like, I know it's a kid's thing. It's like Milton Bradley or something. Or like the I don't know, the freaking Playmate or...
You can get a better one. Get the off-market ones. They look way better.
Don't fuck with those Ouija boards.
Don't get the ones that have logos on it.
I don't care if you believe or don't believe. Like, you don't win with it from all the stories that I've
read. Okay, that's so... Okay, there's a very interesting story. My father told me as a that when he was a kid on his block, there was a kid whose parents died... like in the same week, and
like one after the other,
and that the kid had a completely normal life, and then after this, after his parents died, he just had a string of bad luck nonstop after that, like friends dying, like sister, all this shit, and he said that around the neighborhood, everyone knew that he had done a Ouija board with a couple of neighborhood kids, and that after that happened,
so the Ouija board happened before the parents dying?
Exactly.
Damn.
So they linked that and go like, that's what started.
That's not
that
fair, because it's like, I didn't play with the Ouija board, my stupid kid did, and now I gotta die for it.
Fucking A. You sucks. Don't know what you're inviting in, dude. That's the whole legend. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know the movie Exorcist, The Exorcist, the famous movie, The Exorcist. It was actually based on this kid named Roland Doe. I think that's a pseudonym, but Roland Doe was playing with a Ouija board. Basically, he was an only child who developed a strong attachment to his aunt, who was a spiritualist, who showed him how to use a Ouija board. And then after she died, Roland and his parents reported strange phenomena in their house. Furniture moving on its own, scratching noises coming from Roland's mattress, objects levitating. The paranormal occurrences Roland's parents observed always seemed to happen around their son. According to some accounts, a priest conducted an exorcism on Roland in Georgetown University Hospital, a Jesuit institution in D.C., during which the boy managed to snap off a bed spring from underneath his mattress and use it to slash the priest's arm.
Fuck.
Roland and his parents eventually left their home in Maryland to stay with extended family in St. Louis, and then there the priest carried out at least 20 exorcisms over the course of a month. Witnesses claim that Roland spoke in a deep, unrecognizable voice and spouted Latin phrases he'd never learned. He reportedly vomited so profusely that the exorcist performing the rite had to wear a raincoat. And he fought so violently that 10 people were required to hold him down. One of the priests said that at a certain point, he saw the word hell appear as though etched into Roland's flesh. And then in April of 1949, several hours into an exorcism, Roland finally surfaced from his trance-like state and said, "He's gone," to the priests. And then he was fine.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Did he say who was in there?
No, he didn't. Well, maybe he did. I didn't research this one as much. I just thought it was interesting because the other two had sexual abuse in their stories.
Right.
And then this one had the Ouija board in their story. So the two doorways that all the priests talk about, like this was the second one. Because Roland doesn't seem to have any sexual abuse, but he does have an aunt that was heavily into the occult and gave him a Ouija board.
Maybe taught him Latin too. Who knows?
Maybe, but probably not because he was a kid.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and so this is what the movie The Exorcist was based on.
Wow.
Well, the book was based on it, and then the movie was based on the book. Yeah. Several researchers have since cast doubt on whether anything supernatural took place in the exorcisms, but none has been able to definitively contradict the priest's accounts.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is what's wild about all this is that, like no one's been able to explain it. Like, I don't know if they currently have scientists like looking at I think they should do that. Like have some scientists or psychologists in there when the exorcisms are happening so that they can possibly provide some sort of explanation. Because right now it's like, okay, but what does a scientist say? We don't know. Like, why aren't the scientists going in there?
They run out of town.
Yeah, they don't want to say anything.
Yeah, what do you want? That's why ufology got like ignored for so long.
Yeah, which is sad.
Because everyone's just afraid of being called a kook and shit.
But like the whole process of science is to debunk all these things through science, right? So like you want to have things that you can't explain so you could go try to explain them.
Shit, I'm with you, girl. Preach.
I know. But then, the government gives grants to like lure scientists away from studying that. And
well, yeah. I would criticize a grant to study exorcism,
but then it could put an end to all these people talking about it.
No question,
right? You know, like I feel like people just want answers, And when there's no answers and like this keeps happening to people, like people, you know, get their bodies taken over and they start speaking in different languages and vomiting everywhere, like I would want a cure. Like, can you just like tell me what the fuck's wrong or like explain it so we can work on a cure for this?
We need a cure, man.
Because so far the only cure is to be exorcised by a priest.
Or to get into a holy water jacuzzi.
Or a holy water jacuzzi, which is why aren't people doing
they
that?
They should be manufacturing them.
They should have priests selling holy water jacuzzi.
That's what I'm saying.
They're pre-blessed.
You know the Pope can bless literally anything?
Yeah.
Like, he has blessed a Lamborghini Aventador before. I had the picture of it.
No.
Yeah, there's a picture of the Pope.
Standing, in a blessed Lamborghini?
He's standing in front of a fucking Lamborghini Huracan or whatever, and he's, like, blessing it. It's a white Lamborghini.
Whoa. I also thought it was strange that one of the doorways is sexual abuse, and then, you know, like, the history with the Catholic Church. And
oh,
like,
yeah.
Because I think, like, if you are to go down that route and you believe that that's a doorway, like, I think it got corrupt and, like, if you were a Satan worshiper or like into the occult or witchcraft or whatever, wouldn't you want to go destroy the Catholic Church from within?
Yeah, fuck yeah. Like, if they're my enemy, hell yeah.
Yeah. Like, so I feel like if you know that that's a doorway for demons.
Or knowing that human beings are corruptible, easily corruptible.
Yeah.
You know, you just go about influencing them that way.
Oh, yeah. Getting the priests to do
all
kinds
of shit. Who knows?
Well, when Beelzebub was speaking through Anna Auckland, it was presenting like philosophical debates on like why you should join the other side. So maybe it got one or two of them.
Damn.
I don't know. We don't know. And that's, I think, the most eerie part of all of it is that we don't know. Like there's just no answers. There's like a lot of questions and not enough answers.
I wish I could have been in that room.
I don't. And then,
well, no, but you're listening to it,
no.
Right? And then it's like you're watching TV and you're like, damn, Beelzebub won that debate. Right?
Like a presidential debate between
like
a priest and Beelzebub?
Like, I thought the questions were a little, you know, not great, but Beelzebub won far and clear in a way.
Like presented much more factual evidence.
He just got to the point.
Yeah.
You know, the priest guy kept reading.
He was saying reading prayers, like, outdated
we
traditional
got it,
prayers.
Man. Stop reading. Speak from the heart.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah, I mean, I don't wish to be in that room. All the duns were like, that was the most horrifying thing I've ever seen, and I never thought something like that could exist. But I would like to see videos of it, maybe.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Like, then I don't have to smell the smell. Like, you think about, like, they describe it as being the most wretched stench.
I don't like bad smell.
She's vomiting and pissing everywhere, and then she's like, you know, speaking in different voices and like multiple voices at a time, growling. She's fucking stuck to the ceiling.
Stuck to the goddamn ceeling. Get
they
down.
They can't even get her off. They
get
had to
down.
Need like 10 people to
get
her get off.
Get off of the ceiling.
Get off the ceiling.
Come on.
Although that scene reminds me of the scene in Scary Movie.
Of course.
Like, they ruined it for me. They ruined exorcisms for me.
Maybe that was their plan.
Yeah. Maybe.
So now we all just make fun of exorcisms.
Right?
See?
I think it's really, I mean, they're getting requested all the time. Oh, I have some stats. So the church has been training new exorcists in Chicago, Rome, and Manila. And in 2011, the U.S. had fewer than 15 known Catholic exorcists. Today, the priest said that there are between 70 and 100 known exorcists. Again, no official statistics exist, and most dossiers conceal the identity of their appointed exorcist to avoid unwanted attention. So these people don't want you to know that they are doing these exorcisms.
Of course not.
They're like, they don't even want to be discredited as priests because they're like...
Like, I'm not a crazy quack
person. Yeah, still come to my...
Dude, okay, so I got to say, other than, I think, storm chasing, I think this would be probably my second career choice.
Yeah?
Because I find it so very interesting.
You would want to be a storm chaser?
Storm chasing is so sick.
Why? It's a natural disaster that would probably kill you.
No, but it's a fucking tornado, and it's fucking huge.
Right.
And have you ever been around a tornado? I have.
I haven't, and I don't want to.
So I have, and it's an interesting, horrific thrill.
But
it's like skydiving.
So tornadoes are known to kill people, like, and that's scientifically proven, like it's a natural occurrence and it's like it kills people.
Yeah, but I want to be like in Twister where he has a scientific research reason to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it happens, I can jump up and down and be like, we did it.
Well, you could do that with other things. You could be like, we did it.
I just want to turn it.
You could become an accountant and then after tax season's over, you're like, we did it.
What if I had an elaborate set of powder And I got enough of it.
I thought you were going to say powers. But
no, powder.
Powder, okay.
Powders. Many different powders.
Uh-huh.
But my scientific dream was to...
Throw it in the tornado?
Throw it into the tornado and create a rainbow tornado.
A rainbow tornado? That'd be pretty sick.
Wouldn't that be sick?
But I don't think...
And then once I do it, I'm like, we did it! And I'm like crying and like, well, I'm hugging all the other scientists.
But you'd have to get close enough that it would swallow you.
It's a risk worth taking.
That's true. If you did that, I would be impressed.
Right?
But anything less than that, I would not be impressed.
Isn't that better than that free solo guy fucking climbing a mountain with his hands?
No.
I thought it was. Because honestly... It's like many people have climbed this mountain. He's like, yeah, but I'm just going to do it with only my hands, no tools. It's like, I mean, look, dude, that's sick and all, but turning a tornado rainbow colors?
Yeah.
That's way sicker.
The difference is he actually did it.
Well, I haven't done it yet.
No one's done that yet.
No, I know, but no, literally no one's turned a tornado even one color. I'm right. talking about turning it like seven colors at the same time.
Yeah, that would be pretty sick.
It'd be sick as
can
fuck.
Can you make like fireworks go off too? Like, I want a light show.
Later.
It'll get to a point where I'm bored with the rainbow color.
I know it will because everyone's going to start doing it yeah. after I do it. Like, you'll see an American flag one yeah. and like all this shit. And you're like, oh, okay, we got it already. It'll yeah. be like July 4th, but.
I'm sorry that I'm not impressed by most things you do and you feel the need to make rainbow tornadoes. But I would be impressed by that.
You'd have to be.
Let's be honest. All right, guys. Well, let us know what you think about exorcisms and spooky stuff and those stories. There were so many exorcism stories that I read that creeped me out, but I wanted to pick like the most frightening ones and the ones that could be debated the most.
You
and
did good.
So there you have it.
Hey,
and
don't forget to
go to iTunes.
That's right.
Rate us 5 stars.
That helps so much. And also check out our Patreon. We love our
Patreon. Patreon.com/sticky. We do bonus episodes of Shit They Don't Tell You called Shit They Don't Tell You After Dark, where we talk about shit that they didn't tell us that we're having to go through right now in the current moment as we're going through it. We also do another podcast there called We Just Woke Up, where we give you our thoughts upon waking up.
It's, and we do monthly cool live streams.
Yeah, it's tight. Go, and the community over there is awesome. Shout out to our Patreon community. You guys are fucking dope.
Shout out.
We love you. All right, and that's it.
That's it.
We'll see you next week. Bye.